We get to number 7. I think I'll do a little mini review. These were 7 tools, 7 practices, ways of reflecting, which support, encourage, enable us to relax, to become calm, collected, cool. Because becoming calm, cool, and collected means becoming clear, becoming able to see clearly, to stay with, be with, understand the workings of the neurotic sense of self and the effects of that, and thereby, and only thereby, the releasing of it. Freedom. So these 7, well, 6 so far, plus I'll add the 7th. So in no particular order, but I chose this order maybe because they're easy to do, the first ones that get more subtle, is to be grateful, to count blessings, to nourish the hungry part of us, which is always wanting more, other, different, better, change something. And when we feed that hungry needing to make it be something else, we feel relaxed because we feel nourished, and we then calm down. And what are your blessings? All kinds of blessings. It's easy to find them when we look. They're everywhere, all over the place. Personal ones, shared ones, universal, natural ones, in the world, all kinds. People, things, abilities, gifts, faculties, all kinds. Era. The second one is to reflect on what is reliable, what do we actually trust. It's the developing of a sense of trusting, because as well as having that feeling of hunger, never quite satisfied, it's never quite enough, we need to do something, get something, is a sense of insecurity, because everything's shifting, everything's changing, we never quite know what's coming next. What can we trust? We can't trust health, we can't trust, you know, very little is certain. What is reliable? What can we place our hearts upon so we can move forward with less doubt, that hindrance doubt that hangs us up and fuels the doing, the franticness. And we came up with all kinds of things that we can trust, you know, all of you found ways of trusting. There was 3 that since then have come into my mind. One was the one that we talked about in the car going home. One thing we can trust, which is really one of the only things there is now. Anything other than now isn't even real. So how can we trust anything like that? An idea or the future or what might be or this very moment, this moment's experience. That's another translation of Dharma, is what's happening, this. You can't not trust this. That's one of the things that we haven't said. Another thing that we hadn't said, I didn't think of adding in that talk about what can we trust, is truthfulness. Truth and trust are the same root word. And you know when you don't know what's going on, and then somebody explains something enough and you go like, oh, I get it now. Oh, I see. You may not like what you hear, but now at least you know there's a sense of like, right, that's that feeling. I sort of settled down instead of like, what's all murky? I don't know. I don't get it. What do you mean? Truthfulness is so reliable. That quality, like loyalty. Beautiful. And another one that we didn't talk about, but is the capacity, the innate, true nature's capacity, which is awareness. Now, awareness is pure. Awareness is, awareness sees, knows, understands, is potentially vast. But what happens is we color it. So it's not always clear and pure. It's seeing something, but like, you know, when you see somebody with attachment or desire, then you see them through rose-colored glasses. You see them, all right? You may be aware, but you're aware with a coloration, a distortion. They're wonderful. Lo and behold, later on, they're normal, but... Or the opposite, we see things through, you know, negative pains. One of the descriptions of meditation that this Tibetan phrase is cleaning the view or polishing the view. It's polishing the lens of awareness, keeping, removing the distortions, the tendencies, the opinions. Often they're unconscious, and we don't realize we're looking with some bias. But nevertheless, we can increasingly trust awareness. We don't have to get it and manufacture it, and it's just a matter of remembering. Anyway, to find means to develop a heart that's trusting is an accessing that same sense of calming down, right? Settling down. The second one. The third one is kindness that we practice. Kindness, caring, friendliness, well-wishing, the active befriending as well as the passive, quiet receiving, listening, holding with respect, kinds of caring, all the different ways, millions of different ways to be careful, be interested in, be empathetic with. Open our hearts to each other, the connecting of the heart in all those ways, singing, crying together, whatever it is. There's a little story about that. Forgotten it till this moment. Apparently there was some competition. I don't know if it was just children were asked to contribute or their parents to contribute about stories of compassion. And this little four-year-old boy got this prize. Who knows where I get this information over the years, you know, you sort of share them, other people say the little snippet. Anyway, this little boy got the prize of the most compassionate, and this was what happened. He and his mom lived beside their neighbor, and it was a couple, an elderly couple, and the wife died. And the husband was left grieving. And they came home, mom and little boy, one day, and the old man is sitting there, grieving, crying in his rocking chair on the porch next door. So the little boy hops off from the mum and goes over and climbs up the steps to be with this man, and pretty soon he stops crying. And after a little few minutes, the little boy comes back to his mum, and then she says to him, "What did you do? What did you say? What did you say?" And the little boy said, "I didn't say anything, I just helped him cry." Passive friendliness. So kindness, friendliness, that all of the whole aspects of metta and their many colors, compassion. That would be the third one we were doing. And then the fourth one, I believe in this order, I'm not sure if I'm right here, was joy. Yeah. So what brings us joy? And then the whole putting reference around the Buddha's teaching of how piti and the factors of awakening leads automatically to joy. When we have experiences, it's the same almost, it's in the same department as counting our blessings, because they give us joy and then we feel satisfied and calm and all that. And then we share, didn't we, yesterday, different things, and that was the commonest thing we shared was joy, actually. It was interesting to see that. The least often of all the things we shared, those states that we accessed that affected us and helped us with calm, were kindness. I was quite interested. We actually preferred joy to kindness. It's, I don't know if that means something about you. Anyway, those were four. And then five and six this morning, we were talking about zooming out, putting in perspective, getting, you know, away from the in-your-face struggle with your particular drama and putting it in perspective. The shared, how, you know, we're all struggling, doing the best we can, and don't sweat the small stuff, those things. And then giving our attention, the sixth one we were doing this morning, giving our attention to those experiences and those, you know, even just things around us, which were not likely to trigger the pleasure and the displeasure, the craving and the aversion, because they're not the extremes and the dramatics and the newsworthy, apparently, items, but those which mostly get dismissed or missed or not noticed as not meaning anything. But when we are able to be with things which aren't so triggering of our reactivity, we'll of course be calmer. And so some of you explored some of that this morning and talked about what that was like. So those are a little recap for those who weren't here, and for all of us, a review. So number seven, we get to number seven. And so this one is sort of, they're all intertwined. They're all, it's all there with all the other ones. They're not different ones, but it's in a way ultimate, I think. That's why I'm putting it last. It's the experience itself of freedom, and in terms of the experience of release. Release, letting go. Lots has been written and said about letting go, but itself is quite an art. One of the words is relinquishment. One of the words is restraint, nekkhama. That's actually in the list for those who like the structure of the Buddhist teachings. It's becoming a little mantra of mine. The paramis. So the first of the paramis I mentioned before lunch about dana. The second of the paramis is sila, meaning respect and care with how we relate to each other. We don't exploit or harm each other, or, you know, lie to each other and be angry as best we can. And this is the third one, and it's often translated as renunciation. And my immediate association with the word renunciation is Thomas A. Becket, wearing a hair shirt. And for those who don't know what that is, it's an undergarment, but it's made of horse hair, woven, felted together, so it's unbelievably prickly and itchy. That's really punishment, so that you don't indulge yourself. I don't know if they had silk in those days. They did in China, but they didn't in England at the time. But they maybe already had cotton. They had fine wool. They had flax, I guess, for linen. So he wore a hair shirt. That's my idea of what we think of when we think of renouncing. Definitely not chocolate. Probably not even plumbing. The opposite of joy. But that's not what it means at all. It actually, this whole idea is releasing the grip of belief in meing, in the ego, in all the selfing behaviors. So it's releasing the belief in planning, relief in the belief in judging, release, ungripping from believing right, wrong, good, bad, me, other. All of the ways we perceive, that the ego perceives, the left hemisphere perceives, it's allowing ourselves to release that, or be released by that, because it's not even we doing anything. What actually happens in your experience when you look closely? It isn't that you did it. It's almost like when we become mindful, and we've not been mindful, and we've been off in Paris or wherever we've been, we didn't actually go there. We didn't mean to go there. It just was habit. And somehow we got sent back again, and we wake up and we're here, and we didn't do that. Similarly, when we realize we were judging, the insights dawn, we don't do them. When joy arises, and then as a result calm arises, we don't do it. The we doing, we like to think we're in charge and we're doing it all. We're doing very little. It's habit that's doing it. It's belief that the executive assistant's scheming and planning and explaining is helpful and right and will work. It's a belief. It's a perception. When we see by being present over and over, more and more, the shenanigans of this selfing activity going on and the cost of it, it's mostly the cost of it that teaches us, then the whole system just doesn't go there. You've heard that thing, I'm sure you've heard that quote numbers of times. I don't know who it was who wrote it, and I don't even know if it was a Buddhist person, and I can't remember their name, somebody's name. Autobiography in 5 short chapters. Do you know what I'm talking about, anybody? I walked down a street, there was a big hole in the sidewalk, I fell into the hole. I didn't know how I got in there, and flashed around, and then eventually crawled out. chapter 2, I went down the street, there was a hole in the sidewalk, I fell in. I don't know how I fell in, I didn't mean to fall in, I got out really quickly, it wasn't my fault, I just didn't realize. That third chapter, I go down the, you know, I see the hole, and I said, did I fall in? No, I go around it. The third one, because there's only five chapters. Oh no, I got in it, but it was definitely my fault. But I got out right away. Like, I can't blame anyone else. The fourth one is I go around it, I see it. And the fifth one, I finally go down a different street. Well, that's wisdom releasing you from falling into the same old. And you didn't actually, it isn't really that you go down a different street. It's that when the hole is there, falling in doesn't happen. That belief in the falling in the hole idea, you don't believe it, and so it doesn't do it anymore. So it's really, the releasing is more that we're released by the truth rather than we do the releasing, because there isn't, more and more, there isn't a we realize doing anything. In fact, as soon as there is a we doing anything, we're in that hole. So it's this thing of being released or releasing or relinquishing or... And there's another teaching, which is, I think this is really useful teaching. It's a nibbida, it's disgust. So we release the neurosis, the meing, the costly things which the executive system's doing that doesn't really help, because it's disgusting. Well, disgusting is not a great word, because disgusting is very negative. But what it means, and the example the Buddha gave, which is a really great example, is a dog is running around out there and it is digging around as they do. Apparently, I've never had a dog. And it digs up an old bone, and it gets this bone out, and then it just starts like mauling around with the bone and sniffling around and licking and digging around with this bone, looking for the morsels of whatever marrow and sinew and the stuff that they like. Well, it does that, but it's an old bone, and there isn't any. And it takes it a while to try this and look here and sniffle here and dig around in here, and eventually it realizes, there's nothing here. There's no point digging around anymore in this old dead bone, it's got nothing for me. And so the disgust is that, like, pointless. It's not that it's revolting, it's not a rotten, horrible, that negative association, it's just completely pointless. Any effort in this department is absolutely pointless, is nothing. That's that feeling of, like, this busy little thinking and judging and trying and all that doesn't do it. I know, the whole system knows, this is ineffective behavior. This whole program doesn't work as far as well-being. It works for survival. Yes, we make our appointments and we go buy our apples and oranges, but that's as far as it goes. And so the tendency of the system to go that way for well-being just doesn't, because it knows. And it's learned that. Blech. It's learned that because it's realized the ineffectiveness. It's realized the costliness of it, the exhaustion of it. Let's realize the pain, the dukkha of it, enough dukkha. We need to experience the dukkha of that activity, that whole way, over and over enough that the whole system is like, oh, I don't need to judge myself anymore. And it doesn't even get that far as a thought, and I don't need to. It just doesn't do it. That releasing is a moment of awakening, and it happens, and you don't do it. You cannot do it. You doing it means it won't happen. And it's an accident. As Chogyam Trungpa says, awakening is an accident, and meditation makes us accident prone. So this is the final calming, the deep calming, is the releasing. And we can do it in little ways, we can do it in little ways, but it's increasingly seen as it keeps happening. When you look really closely at your experience, you'll see the grabbing, and when it's recognized, it just ungrabs. Like the tension in the body that the massage therapist touches, oh, it's seen and it goes, ah. Oh. It's seen and it goes, ah, oh, over and over and over, until often what would then grab doesn't even get to grab because it's already seen and doesn't even hook like that. So that's the ultimate, the letting go part. And one way of practicing, there's different ways, but I mean, just seeing it and understanding it, it's subtle, and so it's harder to practice. I more wanted to just have us, our minds, remembering this. But one thing that's useful is let, the word letting, let. Not just let go, because that is very easy to fool ourselves. Oh, I'm judging myself, I must let go. I must let go, as though it's an active thing, and really it means get rid of. That's what a lot of people actually are thinking it means, is to get rid of this. That's not what letting go means. Letting is much more letting things come, letting them be here, letting them go if they're going. It's more the allowing stance, that friendly, spacious awareness which receives what's there. It's the not doing anything. It's the not self anything. Not wanting, not fixing, not explaining, not even thinking, just being seen, being known. The non-egoing. So Barbara today was reading this book and showed me it, and I don't have it, and so she ended up actually saying, you know, you just keep it, I'll get myself another one. So this I've only seen this morning, and because it matches my outfit, I decided. But no, I didn't decide. She gave it to me. And so I've been looking at it a bit. So some of you will have heard of Adyashanti. So who hasn't? So Adyashanti is an American guy who's in his 40s, who lives in California, who's did a lot of Zen practice, so Buddhist understandings and stuff, and who's had quite awakening experience, quite deeply. I can't say, who knows. Okay, let me back up. Awakening isn't, I think I even may have said this, I'm not sure. It's not that there's an awakened person. Awakening is an experience. Awakening is experienced in a moment, and at times, for some people, more moments, or again and again, and sometimes stays in that state for a while, and then, like the bloop, like I talked about being tossed out of the bowl, then something happens, and there is less than awakened response to some situation, and so on. Degrees. Really, it's like more greater or many or longer moments of awakening, and some, it's, you know, really a lot. Which is how you can understand how people who apparently are really wise in lots of ways are not so wise in other ways, and something happens, and how can it be that some of these wonderful, wise Asian Rinpoches have come to the West, and then they've ended up, like, you know, having a whole ton of sexual liaisons with students? Like, how does that go together with wisdom, for instance? Well, how it goes together is it's not about the person, it's about their consciousness or lack thereof in any moment. It's a process that people are in. This man has had quite some significant awakening understanding, and this is a poetry book, so it's a book of some poems and some little one-liners. And so I thought I'd read some to you, because from his moments of being quite free, he has some lovely things to say. So I've got a few quotes I want to share. In expecting self-realization, could be awakening, enlightenment, whatever word you like, in expecting self-realization to be something special, you miss it. God is not in the clouds, but under your feet. It's because, of course, we expect, there's me in there with expectation that it's impossible to see with me in the way. Meing in the way, I'd say. All cruelty arises from beliefs. In the absence of all beliefs, love shines. The true awareness shines from the heart, not from the head. Before you start to meditate, ask yourself a question. Is it true that peace and silence are not here now? With our intention to move towards quietness, the first step we take is away from it, because we assume it's not here already. to surrender willfulness and positionality is the greatest act and the doorway to infinite love and freedom. To surrender willfulness. Willfulness is just another way of saying ego, that separate sense of self busily doing something. To surrender that is, of course, the doorway to release. To surrender willfulness and positionality is the greatest act and the doorway to infinite love and freedom. It's not the joy of attaining a state, but the joy of utter relief from the struggling and the seeking. An ordinary person seeks freedom through enlightenment. An enlightened one expresses freedom through being ordinary. Truth comes to an innocent mind as a blessing and a sacrament. Truth is a holy thing because it liberates thought from itself and it illumines the human heart from the inside out. Truth comes to an innocent mind. I love that. As a blessing and a sacrament. There's just a few more words. He says a few things in here. I was reading it today in bits and bobs that words are in the way, you know, because words are the separate sense of self trying to connect, and freedom is beyond all words, which is why you can't really read about freedom, liberation, those states. There's no way of describing with the methodology of the self. It's just not possible to talk about. We get haiku from some of the wise Zen teachers, you know. Summer evening, still pond, frog jumps in, plop. That's about as close as we can get to describing isness. Anyway, don't try and grapple with any of this information if this is, you know, if the mind is trying, it's just in the way. Relax about this. But if you're able to tune into more, even what we can tune into is the presence of the tendency to get our teeth into something, the presence of the grip of the pushing or the pulling or the way we're entangled in whatever way you're entangled. The sense of that. And you can't tell when it's happening because usually the second mind isn't there. We're not mindful, which is why we're entangled. But in the moment that we are, we can feel the residue of what that was like. And if you can, stay present as it subsides, because you're now not so entangled, so it's going to be subsiding. You can tune in, it's possible, to the releasing of it. And if you can stay present as your mind is better trained, maybe not right after lunch, we'll see how you do, but don't worry. At times, we can stay with the flavor of what was some neurotic something, tangle, the releasing of it, the absence of it, the living, abiding without it. And it's from those moments when we're not entangled and present, we can then sort of look back and compare and realize the costliness, the tension, the angst, the churning, whatever it was for you, of doing it. And that, over and over, done over and over, experienced over and over, is why the system releases. Because it is experiencing presence and absence of struggling. And that's how we do it. It's how all we can do is tune in on that level. And then wisdom keeps freeing it up. That's all I can say. So there's not a lot of practicing of letting go. It's more letting, allowing, acknowledging, and seeing how that is different from and freer than, oh no, why can, oh I want, that manipulative extra that gets added. It's not adding anything. It's just quietly saying, oh, this is happening, this is hard, this is interesting, this is boring. It's not even saying anything, but it's like having that way of meeting and being with. Do you have questions? Am I clear to you? Is this okay? Right off the bat, new meditators can't expect to be able to see this level of the gripping and the releasing of it. But you can, little bit by little. Maybe I shouldn't have said that last sentence. Don't expect anything, just practice. Practice with honesty. Don't try and kid yourself. Don't try and make it be what it isn't. Just be there and keep watching and see what's there. Don't take it personally. Don't add commentary. Just with some friendliness, just keep holding your hand and be there with your process. And it unravels whenever it unravels and whatever ways it unravels. Okay, that's enough talking, I think. Unless anyone has any kind of question, was I confounding people in any way there? All right. Thank you.